Okay, so here we go. I am extremely happy and very proud, also very impressed to have on the other side of the Skype connection none other than the legendary Peter Frampton. Peter, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine and nice to be talking with you too.
Yeah, I mean, it's really a thrill for me to be able to talk to such a legendary guitar player. I have this traditional first question, Peter. What was your first guitar?
Oh, my first guitar was one that my father bought. I don't think it even had a make or name or anything. It was like a sort of generic, very cheap, steel string guitar, acoustic. And I think it cost in those days probably like £3.50.
Okay.
a few euros.
And you had an incredible rich career, obviously. If you have, from your point of view, to pick, I don't know, two or three main turning points in your career, what would they be?
Geez. Well, I mean, I think the fact that the first main thing that that happened as far as me sort of getting into the business was when I joined the Herd, which was in 66, 67. And instead of going on to further schooling and then to music college, which is what I was going to do, when you get offered at 16 a job with the rock band professional, you hope that your parents say yes.
And they did.
I think that they did,
Okay.
yes. Very strange, actually, because both my parents, my father was a teacher and my mother worked for a headmistress of another school, so her assistant. So, yeah, it was tough going there for a moment, but yeah, it worked out good.
And right from the start, it was a love at first sight with the guitar, or did it evolve along the time?
No, it was a love affair straight away. Even before I got one, I started playing my grandmother's banjolele, which is a banjo-shaped ukulele, and when I was seven, and found that in the attic. And then as soon as I started playing that, I became aware of American rock and roll and also our British rock and rollers, who at the time were people like Cliff Richard, Adam Faith. But the band that I liked the most was The Shadows, Hank Marvin, Bruce Welch, Jet Harris, and Tony Meehan at the time with the first band. And they really sort of, for England, they were, I call them the pre-Beatles, the instrumental Beatles, because they were, if Cliff Richard, who they backed on the records, if Cliff Richard wasn't number one, they were number one. And there was a stretch there for about 4 or 5 years. And they were just very influential in the makeup of British guitar players and bands in general. And you started listening to The Shadows, and then you ventured off into other types. But it was a very attractive, homegrown English rock and roll band, playing instrumentals, but also being able to back up Cliff Richard. So it was a pretty heavy thing. I think if you spoke to all the guitar players of my era, Jeff Beck, Pete Townsend, even Steve Winwood, I'm sure they all love and still love Hank Marvin, and that was the biggest influence for me starting out.
Even as a guitar player, you would say that Hank Marvin was definitely someone very important for you?
Oh, absolutely, yes. His sound, his technique of playing him, and the way he played a melody was, well, nobody can play like that. It's very simplistic in one way, but try and play it and it's very difficult
Yeah, it is, yeah.
because it's just so spot on, But then I went from listening to Hank Marvin to Django Reinhardt,
Yeah.
which which is the complete opposite, and around the same time period too, because my parents loved Hot Club de France, and so Stefan Grappelli and I think now I have every track he's ever done, I think. And it's on my iPhone.
Okay, cool. And any other important turning point in your career after that?
Well, I think that Humble Pie was a completely a wonderful band for me to have been a part of, because I had been listening to a lot of jazz as well as blues during my time in the Herd, because everybody else was just listening to Eric Clapton at the time. So I decided to listen to some other type of music as well, and maybe slant my playing more that way. And having listened to Django Reinhardt most of my life at that point, it was more of a jazz tinge to it, my playing. And then what Humble Pie did, I think, more than anything else, was give me a platform whereby to formulate the Peter Frampton guitar style. And I think that if it hadn't have been for Humble Pie, it wouldn't have happened that way. And, you know, it was the mixture of rock, blues, and jazz, all in, you know, and R&B, because that Humble Pie incorporated all those elements of music. And even country. Steve did some country stuff. So, yeah, it was very well-rounded, and I was able to, put everything together. It was definitely, I call it like the apprenticeship for my guitar style.
Mm-hmm. And you are obviously extremely famous because of your guitar playing, but you also led a band for many years. You had some incredible success, a huge hit while you were singing. So was it an afterthought? Okay, someone had to sing, so I might as well do it. Or was it okay, I need to sing and I need to play the guitar because those are two voices I can use? What was your approach of, between voice and guitar playing?
Well, I started off when I started playing guitar. I think the first song that I ever learned was to sing was Buddy Holly's Peggy Sue.
Okay.
And but I wasn't so interested in the singing part. I did that when it was just acoustic guitar, but when I got my hands on an electric, it was all about the guitar playing, and I really wasn't that interested in singing. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until the Herd, really, that I joined as the lead guitarist and the backing one of the backup singers. I wasn't one of the front men, you know, as far as singing. And then we got some new managers called Howard and Blakely, and they wrote two or three big hits for us. And when we came to record the first one, they just said, Peter's going to sing. And I said, no, you don't understand. I'm the guitar player. Andy and Gary are the two singers. No, Peter, you don't understand. You will be singing this. I said, well, I don't even know if I can, you know. So that's when the first song I ever sung on record in a professional way was a track called I Can Fly, which was made some noise, but nothing. And then the next record was the big hit, the Herd's first big hit, From the Underworld. Mm-hmm. And so then I became known as this, having joined as the guitar player, I became known as the Herd's lead singer, which really didn't go down too well with the rest of the band either. Okay.
And how your approach to guitar has changed over the years?
You know, when you have a passion for something, like whether it be painting or photography or writing or music, any instrument or singing or whatever, I find that over the years, you get to a point where maybe you need to take a little break And I'll go a few days without playing, and then my passion for it just seems to rejuvenate itself. And it gets to day five, and I go, I can't stand it anymore. I've got to pick it up, and I start playing. But after those 4 or 5 days, and sometimes after a tour, it might be a week, I feel so rejuvenated with my feelings for my love of the guitar, that I go off and I write something new, or I find a new lick, or I steal somebody's lick. I become a little kid again. The guitar is something that is that much of a passion for me, and I realize that passions they get reborn throughout your life. I think the same passion just gets. I think it gets stronger and stronger.
So you would say it is actually a good thing to take a break from the guitar once in a while.
Me personally, I mean, I know there's probably a lot of guitar players that would say maybe, no, you should play every day, no matter what. But I think a lot of people that I know that are incredible players still have that same, it's good for a few days to put it down and do something completely different, and then come back to it. It's like anything. I think too much of a good thing,
Let's talk about gear for a moment. You were recently, not so long ago, reunited with your long gone beloved Les Paul. Is that still your guitar of choice? Your number one guitar?
It's become it the number one again. Yes, when it came back, I was more used to playing the other guitars that I had, the one that Gibson and I had come up with as from memory to replace it, the Peter Frampton Custom Les Paul, which, we've made over 1,200 of them available, are out there now. People have them. And of course, when I got the original one back and Gibson cleaned it up a little, and we put some, the pickups and the electronics didn't work anymore, but the main soul of the guitar was still there. So we put some old pickups, new old ones, in there, pattern numbered, sort of 60s pickups in there. And oh my goodness, it all came flooding back. And the sound of it is just so different from any other Les Paul for me. And in fact, that when I first played it at rehearsals on some of the Comes Alive stuff, the band just there, I thought their heads were going to snap around, because they just, like, they heard that sound, and it's like, it's the real thing, And there's just something special about that guitar that sounds that way. So it's wonderful to have it back, and I play it more and more and more.
Yeah, I guess. And can you describe your sound chain from the guitar until the amp that you are using at the moment?
Well, if I was to go into the studio, I would probably, like the other day, we laid down a blues track, I have a new studio here in Nashville, and we just did a test session. So I got some friends to come in, and I used my original Les Paul, and I just plugged into one little distortion pedal or a boost pedal into a matchless combo, and that was a single 12, and that was a phenomenal sound. Just I like to go straight into the amp if possible, but on stage, in order to get all the sounds that I get on record, I use a very involved system, Access Electronics switching system, computerized obviously, which gives me, I think, 22 songs with six presets per song. But then I use a wet dry wet three Marshall cabinets, but I drive all my effects with old 70s Marshalls that have had loops put in them, so I can drive the effects through the outer two affected cabinets. So my main sound, just I just go straight into the Marshall, mm-hmm. into the front of the Marshall, but it's split off so that it can give me all the other effects.
Mm-hmm. And usually the gain you use is coming from the preamp of the amp, or is it coming from both booster or overdrive pedals?
Well, for a clean sound, I choose different preamps as well within the system. So I can use, I have an Egnator,
yeah.
Four preamps I can select from that. Or I have a deluxe reverb head, which is 65, and I have that head, and I can choose the preamp section of that as well. Mm-hmm. So for cleaner sounds, I go that route, and I have a little Dumble altered Fender out, a deluxe out the back, facing backwards, and that gets mic'd too. So the combination of those three preamps are my cleaner sound. And then when I go into the Marshall, it's got some dirt on it already, mm-hmm. but then I do use, it's like a crunch sound, like just on the edge sound. Mm-hmm. And then for different solo sounds, for the boost, the gain, I'll use a Klon Centaur,
yeah.
which is one of my favorites, or an OCD pedal, and then there's all sorts of, like, I have a Mutron for a sort of auto wah sound. What else? I still use an MXR Phase 90 for mm-hmm. the Comes Alive stuff. You know, so I mix old stuff with new stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think it's, as long as the chain is clean, everything is bypassed, is hard bypassed, obviously, when it's not in. So it's a pretty clean setup, I must admit.
Mm-hmm. Before you wrap up, I know you are very busy. You were touring recently with something called the Guitar Circus, so you are all over the place. Tell us a little bit more about the project you have at the moment. Will we see the Guitar Circus in Europe in the upcoming record we're going to listen to in 2014?
Well, first of all, yes, I think you're going to hear it. As far as me coming to Europe, that's it's still in the planning stages.
Cool.
To do that. But my plan was to have as many guitar players on stage as possible. Mm-hmm. So we came up with this idea of having a well-known guitar player just to open, to start the evening off, a well-known guitar player to be in the middle spot, and then me to come on at the end. Mm-hmm. And hopefully then have other guests come and join us in different cities, which is what happened. So we went from Larry Carlton to Rick Nielsen. I mean, nice. In fact, mm-hmm. we had both of those in the same night.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I called it a circus, because it wasn't like an Eric Clapton's Crossroads where it's all blues. Mm-hmm. This was... obviously you've got Rick Nielsen, so we're doing a Cheap Trick number, and then you've got Larry Carlton, so we're doing a very much jazz number of his. And then we had Roger McGuinn from
the Birds
come, and we did some Birds songs, and he had that beautiful 12 string he brought with him and played those wonderful licks. And then people like John Jorgensen, who is plays with Elton, Steve Cropper, mm-hmm. T and the MGs. I mean, and of course our main guest on the tour was BB King.
Yeah. Nice.
So I would get to sit in with BB King every night, which was for over a month, mm-hmm. which was just luxury. So I'm very lucky.
So do you know for a fact it's going to happen in 2014 in Europe, or still working on it? Is that it?
But I can't say it's going to happen, sure, but we are going to release, I'm in the process of choosing the best of the nights that the different guests And that'll be a CD release, yes.
Okay, very cool. So, as a word of as a conclusion, what would be your word of wisdom to guitar players so to find their own voice? I mean, you have an extremely distinctive voice when you play just a couple of notes. What would be your word of wisdom to achieve that?
Oh gosh, I don't know. I think that it's always a difficult question, but I think that you steal from the best and listen to as many. I mean, what the way I formulated a guitar style was just by copying as many different players as I could that appeal to me. You know, whether it be Buddy Guy, whether it be Hank Marvin, whether it be Jeff Beck, Jimi Hendrix. Peter Green. I'm a big Peter Green fan. I think he was very, very tasteful. One of the more tasteful blues players that we had in have in England, and he's still playing great. So I would just Django Reinhardt, Wes Montgomery, Kenny Burrell of the jazz side, and then just put them all together and pull from all those, and then gradually. When you start playing your own solos, your own ad-libbed solos, you sort of hear influences of those guitarists that you've listened to, but finally one day you finish a solo and you go, wow, that sort of sounds like no one. Sort of sounds like, I guess that's me, you know, and that's what you hope, and that's, as I said earlier, that's what Humble Pie did for me. It was definitely a platform to give me the time to formulate that style.
Okay. Well, again, thank you very much for your time, Peter. It was great to be able to talk to you. I wish you all the best for the rest of the year and for plenty of incredible projects for 2014. Thanks a lot, Peter.
Thank you, Pierre. I really appreciate it.